afternoon, soccer aficionados, and welcome to the Champions League, the only show with the European soccer guy. I'm your host, DJ Cruyff, and you're listening to the best radio from San Fran to Japan, Penguin Radio. Radio, the Dominican.edu or 102.3 FM, streaming live from Italy when coronavirus outbreak has been controlled and severely reduced. Luckily, this is the last episode of a 9-shows marathon that hung with you around during this magic tournament called Champions League, which is still not being played. It's really a disgrace, but, you know, health measures have done their job in containing the spreading of the virus, so that's what matters. Up to this day and for the next couple of months, then hopefully near the end of July or August, we'll be able to, you know, go back and watch some Champions League action. Today we will discuss a lot of great articles. I'm so sad. This is the end of our, you know, marathon that had us talking a lot of soccer, a lot of games, both from the present and from the past, because while we were discussing the topics, the outbreak of the illness spread around, so the game stopped and we had to go back in time and watch some old games. We did that. Today we're not going to review some past games. We are going to analyze some articles, great articles published on the internet by amazing writers. We will focus a lot on three different German coaches and, you know, someone who coached in the German Bundesliga and why they are important. Also, we will deal with a super fan of Aaron Lennon, the English winger, who has like 25 t-shirts of him. That's really hysterical. And, for example, we will discuss how the rich clubs are getting richer while the poorer are getting poorer, and this trend, which is of course valid for many sports at many levels, is going to increase after this pandemic. So don't waste any time, let's jump right into it. The first article we're going to discuss today is published on Rivista Undici. It's an Italian online newspaper, and also I think they have like 3 copies per year out in the libraries. It's really a great monthly magazine. I read that every time. I have actually a subscription to that, so if you are knowledgeable with Italian and you know a little Italian, and I don't know, you want to improve your Italian skills, you have to read this piece called Italian Football Show on rivistaundici.com. It means basically 11, the magazine, by James Horncastle. James Horncastle is one of the best writers about soccer in the world. He is an English-speaking journalist, of course. I think he writes for ESPN FC as well, and the BBC or CNN, something like that. I mean, the very best in the world as it comes to sports journalism. He asks to himself this question, he tries to answer it. He goes, why soccer in the 90s was so glamorous? Italian soccer in the 90s was so glamorous and just fancy and cool. In England, it was a cultural phenomenon, he says, not only a sports phenomenon. He deals with one of the best players in these days. In England, Paul Gascoigne, nicknamed Gazza because of his, I should say, peculiar behavior outside of the field. That's really a great player who went in Italy to play with Lazio. So James Horncastle says that many, many of his peers and him as well in his young days went on the TV and they turned it on just to see Lazio and Gazza Gascoigne play. Back in the days, guys, this is what, you know, the younger generation have not understood about Italian soccer and Serie A, which is of course the most important tournament in Italy. In the 80s, in the 90s, Serie A was even more than what today the Premier League is. Amazing players such as Patrick Kluivert, like legends of, of their clubs, respectively, at a young age or an immature stage of their career, they came to Italy and they failed. It was how good the Italian league was. Many examples of this: Thierry Henry, who of course will move on to be an Arsenal legend, scoring more than 200 goals for Arsenal, used to play for Juventus in Italy. Didn't do it. Didn't manage to, push it through, and he got sold and then made the fortunes of Arsenal. But it's just difficult. It was so difficult to make it in Italy. So if you made it in Italy, that meant something else. So go for sure read this great piece by James Horncastle on RevistaUndici.com, as we will move forward to the second thing I want to discuss today. It's really a fun one. Oh, by the way, guys, I have just this thing that popped in my mind that's really worth a couple of minutes to be talked about, because it's really funny. I heard that even in English-speaking countries, the competition, Ugo Fantozzi, which is, of course, Italian from the 70s, is pretty famous. Its creator, Paolo Villaggio, is pretty famous as well, even outside of of Italy. So let's discuss for a while this topic that deals with both Italy and England. It's a film of Fantozzi's character called Il Secondo Tragico Fantozzi, which means The Second Tragic Fantozzi. It's an Italian comedy released in 1976. It's the second film in the saga of the unlucky clerk Ugo Fantozzi, played by its creator Paolo Villaggio. The guy, he's an overtime worker. He's trying to protect the clamorous mega director Duke Count Engineer Semenzara, a CEO who is cheating on his wife, missing security guards a shooting that mistake him as a rug. He's even physically forced to return work in normal daily light hours by his colleague. And there is a really fun scene, guys, in which Ugo Fantozzi, the clerk, is trying to watch a football game, a soccer game, between Italy and England. And so he's in front of the TV, and the film shows a couple of seconds of the game itself. So I was like, okay, what game is this? What is he really trying to see? The film says he's trying to see the Italian national team going up against England in the famous Wembley Stadium in London. So I went on, because I wanted to see the lineups and what was the score, and maybe watch some footage of the game. So I went on the internet, I went online, and I searched for Italy, England, 1976. And I realized, oh, damn, there is no game played between Italy and England in soccer in 1976. So I was looking for previous years, 1975, nope, nothing was there. So what actually was in the movie was a game against Holland from the previous year, 1975, in which they just said, okay, this is the game against England that was eventually played in late November of 76. But the movie was released in the April of 76, so they did a pretty dramatic lie to their viewers with that film. But that's just for soccer and movie geeks, just like your DJ Cruyff right here. As you're listening to Penguin Radio, the best radio from San Fran to Japan, we move on to discuss briefly another 90s topic in Syria, Hidetoshi Nakata. He is a great Japanese midfielder. I mean, Japan has not had many great players, but this guy is widely regarded as one of their best, very player, probably the greatest Japanese soccer player of all time. Born the 22nd of January of 1977 in Kofu, Yamanashi, in Japan, Nakata began his professional career in 1995 and won the Asian Footballer Confederation Player of the Year award in 1997 and 1998. He won the Scudetto with Rome in 2001, a historic win for the Roman side with Francesco Totti, Antonio Cassano, Vincenzo Montella, of course, and the crew. He played for Japan in three World Cup tournaments, probably the best Japan teams they ever had. And he competed in the Olympics twice, in 1996 in Atlanta and in 2000 in Sydney. Nakata is funny now. He's involved in fashion, regularly attending runway shows and wearing designer clothing. He is really an iconic figure in the world of clothing right now. And he, after, you know, it's funny, there are multiple stories about this player, who was really one of the best youngsters in Japan, being scouted by small club Perugia in Italy. This club that was really not on the map, that they got him. And they had this beautiful jersey with a, what's the name again? The Drake on it, the Dragon on it. And they smashed the competition in Italy. They got a couple of safe staying in Syria, a couple of seasons. Then they went back to their reality and got relegated. But Nakata went on. He played, as I told you, with Rome, winning the Scudetto there in his lone season in the capital city of Italy. And then he will move on to go to play in Parma, in Bologna, in Fiorentina. Again, one of the best players in Japan history. And he is, I don't say average, but he was above average in Serie A. But again, in those years, Serie A was so good that even one of the best player in its country was kind of average. And then the last year of his career, not a long career, he played around 10 years, not that much, because of injuries and because of just personal, continuous personal unluckiness. He played his last season in 2005-2006 in England with Bolton Wanderers. Another topic, guys, just before the break, we introduced the first German coach we're talking about today, Ralf Hasenhüttl, as you've heard many, many times in this radio show, guys. I love the German Bundesliga. It's one of the great places where you can watch soccer, but not mainstream soccer, because most of the time we don't want to watch for the 100th time Lionel Messi's Barcelona. We don't want to watch Cristiano Ronaldo for the millionth time. So I encourage you, I suggest you to just switch on some Bundesliga games. You will be entertained for sure. I'm sure of it. And if you will not, just text me, we will discuss it. If you don't enjoy an average Bundesliga game between, I don't know, Borussia Mönchengladbach or RB Leipzig, a team we've been discussing a lot here, you have probably some problems with liking things or not. This article on thesefootballtimes.co, written by Luke Osman, is called How Ralf Hasenhüttl Inspired Ingolstadt's Rise from the Cusp of the Third Tier to the Bundesliga. And it deals with how small clubs FC Ingolstadt 04, as soon as they got rid of the manager, because he was, you know, aiming for something more than this small club in Germany, as soon as they got rid of him, they lost him, they started falling down. Hasenhüttl might not be a household name in English football, but he took over Southampton in early December last year, and he does not have a great recollection of success in Germany. He just, you know, got a double promotion with Ingolstadt, but that's not what stands out in many people's resume, right? You take a small club, two divisions up, okay, fine. Now you have to prove yourself in a bigger competition and in against, you know, bigger clubs. And he did that. He did that because of his manager career brought him, as I told you, in England at Southampton, where he did pretty fine with the Saints. That's how they called Southampton, of course. And he coached them to an easy, easy Premier League 12th place in 2018-19. Then he brought the Saints this year. The Saints are, let's see where they are. I got it right here. 13th. So pretty good for a team that has not the best player in the Premier League. Ralf Hasenhüttl doing a hell of a job in England. Let's move on to what we got here. Oh, this is a great topic I'm going to discuss. We've been dealing with women's soccer a lot in this show on Penguin Radio. We love women's soccer. I personally enjoy women's soccer a lot. It's on TheGuardian.com by Nick Ames. You can find him on Twitter at Nick Ames 82. It's called Harder and Ericsson. After the photo, people wrote and said how much we'd help. It deals with Sweden's Magda Ericsson and Denmark Pernille Harder. And they talk about their kiss in Paris that went viral. And what was it like coming out and join Common Goal, this organization. So after Sweden in the 2019 Women World Cup in France defeated Canada in the last 16, you know, the stage of the competition was the last 16, Magda Eriksson located her partner in the stands and wandered over towards her in the Parc des Princes crowd. It's a great stadium in Paris. They shared a kiss and thought nothing of it until later on, when the amount of activity, as the article says, on their phones suggested something was blowing up. "We weren't aware anyone was taking a photo," Ericsson says, "but somebody had, and the noise on social media had nothing to do with the fact that the girlfriend in question, the Denmark international Pernille Harder, was wearing the shirt of her country's arch rivals. The image's power came from its sheer rarity, a gay, high-profile sporting couple showing their love in public without the slightest abashment. Harder only realized what had happened when her Twitter following suddenly swelled by 3,000. A penny began to drop. That's something so every day to both could be an inspiration to millions." The article by Nick Ames on TheGuardian.com goes on saying how they joined this gay organization that's helping, you know, people, just doing great job in raising awareness. And the pair have pledged 1% of their salaries to help tackle social issues. That's really good. Also because, as you might have known, women's salaries are not that good in sports, and that thing has to change. So they are donating part of that. That's really great by them. Harder and Ericsson together in the former flat in Wolfsburg. There is a beautiful photo of them with a great house they have. And hopefully they will continue to raise some awareness on this issue that are really, really important and affected a lot of sportsmen and women all around the globe. Gay soccer players are not willing to express themselves, but there are a lot of them, as you can hear from many people, players from the past. They just, you know, social barriers are saying, okay, just don't come out, do it later when your career will be over, it will be easier for you. And that's really a stigma in our society. But on a more, you know, light and but still important note, after the break, we'll move on with great other soccer issues.
DU Did You Know is brought to you by Penguin Radio. DU Did You Know that the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is coming up in April? What's that? The Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is an opportunity for Dominican students to practice their presentation skills by showcasing their senior capstone research projects to a live audience.
Is there any way this can help me after college?
Let's ask Professor Bill Phillips, one of the founders of the conference.
Presenting yourself in this manner is very good experience, because when you go out on the job market, you have to present yourself and you have to have confidence when you do it. This is just one more way of getting that confidence.
Along with Professor Bill Phillips, Michael Pujols is one of the other founding members of the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference. Can you tell us about Dominican Scholar?
The role of Dominican Scholar is we're taking the conference schedule, we're putting online in Dominican Scholar, and then we're also, if students want to, and of course, you know, with their faculty advisor permission, we can also upload the posters, we can upload their presentations or slide sets, you know, what have you. So Dominican Scholar plays the electronic role as far as getting the conference out there and making it available to the public.
Is there anything you would like to add, Professor Phillips?
It's a celebration of the capstone project that all students are working on. And it's a privilege to present your research and to have other people see what you're doing, because it's a culmination of your academic experience here at Dominican. And you should be able to be on a platform where you could just show off the stuff that you've done.
How can I find out more information?
The link for Dominican Scholar is scholar.dominican.edu.
Find out more information at scholar.dominican.edu.
See you there! DU Did You Know, brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio.
Welcome back to the Champions League, the only show that brings you inside the historic career of Brazilian winger Elano. As you're listening to Penguin Radio, the best radio from San Fran to Japan, right here on Penguin Radio, as I told you already, radio, the Dominican.edu or 102.3 FM. We're going to read a lot of article today, last episode, ninth and last episode of the Champions League. This one is about, as I told you, Elano. It's on SBNation.com, a pretty famous website in the US as well as Italy, for example, where I am right now. It's on the soccer part of SBNation, that, as you know, has many blogs. So this soccer part of SB Nation article is written by Zito Madu at _Zeets on Twitter, one of the most funny account on Twitter. So I recommend you to check it out. It's called, this article is called "Elano was a gentle force while Manchester City became a powerhouse," and deals with how Elano was not the most important player to Manchester City, but he was the perfect fit in his role. It begins like this. Do you remember Elano? He had a career that took him from Brazil in 2001 to the Indian Super League when he retired in 2015. The peak of his career in terms of status came when he played two seasons for Manchester City from 2007 to 2009. Elano played for City during the period when the club was bought by former Prime Minister of Thailand, Thaksin Shinawatra, in the summer of 2007, and then sold the club to the Abu Dhabi United Group in September 2008. He was there for a club transition from the quiet, middling, non-threatening sibling of Manchester United to the title-winning, noisy neighbors. So it's a really great article. There's a great introduction written by Zito Madu. The article goes on saying that he, the author, has a fondness for Elano because of the gentle and the intelligent way he played. He was a goal-scoring midfielder from his time at Santos in Brazil, where he tallied 22 goals in one season, though those became in 61 matches. He scored a total of 18 goals in 84 games for City. He wasn't physically dominant, nor was he an outstanding dribbler or passer. I think him of a David Silva, for people who couldn't afford David Silva, except better scoring. That's not to denigrate Elano, and that's not for sure, because Elano was such a great midfielder. I remember him, actually, as a great counterpart to Dirk Kuyt in the quarterfinals on the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. Holland, or I should say the Netherlands, went on to beat Brazil and all the way to the final, where they got smashed by Spain. But let's move on. I mean, we stay in England for this next topic, and I mean, yeah, it's England, but it's also kind of Turkey, because Aaron Lennon's great superfan, he is called, has a great name, it's difficult though, I hope I'll pronounce it correctly, Ferhat Utfrak from Turkey, is Aaron Lennon's superfan, and this article on 442 by James Moe, published on 26th November 2018, it's called Meet the 20-year-old Turk Who Can't Get Enough of Burnley's Number 25. And it deals with how this guy is collecting, I mean, not high-profile players' jerseys like Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. No. He is dedicating his life and bank balance to following the fortunes of Aaron Lennon, who used to be youngster, now he kind of disappointed many expectations, and he is playing for relegation side Burnley in England. There is, right at the beginning of the piece, there is a really funny quote of this guy, Ferhat Utfrak, the 20 years old Istanbul native, you know, from Turkey. He says, "It's quite hard to watch all of Burnley's matches on television in Turkey, but I have always found ways to see Aaron Lennon. I have to. I'm his biggest fan." Can you believe that? So he goes back in the days and tries to explain why he loves this player so much. I mean, this player has probably been, for a couple of months, one of the best 100 players in the world. But now he's really not even in the 1,000 best players in England, probably, not even that. I first saw Lennon play for Tottenham in the Champions League in November 2010, Utfrak explains. "Straight away, I was excited by his speed and the way he'd run at defenders so directly. It was the match against Werder Bremen at White Hart Lane. I was so excited by what Aaron Lennon could do. I spent the full 90 minutes focusing on him and his performance. He had an amazing game and got 2 assists. That night, I realized I had a new hero." That's really funny, even not that much for me, because the piece goes on saying that he loved Aaron Lennon also because of his performance at AC Milan, when he set up Crouch to sink my beloved AC Milan team at the San Siro Stadium. I remember really, really precisely that game and how pissed they was that night. So Aaron Lennon, get the hell out of here. You, my guy, my Turkish fellow supporter, get the hell out of here. We'll move on to discuss the Jew who built Bayern Munich and then saved it after surviving the Holocaust. That's really a fitting topic here, because a couple of days ago, 25th of April in Italy, was the celebration of the resistance against the Nazis and, you know, that horrible, horrible crimes they committed. This article talks about former Bayern Munich president Kurt Landauer, and there is a huge undated photo of him as the thumbnail of it. It's a great piece, and everybody's saying how a pioneer he was and how, you know, just the sheer force he had to fight through the whole, I mean, can you believe that? Fighting through the Holocaust and then building a great Bayern Munich squad that will go on to being the most important club in Germany, of course, and one of the very best in the world. Also, he's accredited for basically thinking and shaping the current day Bundesliga. So this guy really a pioneer and one of the most important figure in European soccer, Kurt Landauer. You can read about him in a piece on the LA Times, so latimes.com, jump on that, by Kevin Baxter. It was published on the 28th of January 2018. But let's move on again. So many issues, so many topics to talk about. This is why we love the Champions League, the only show that was about, that deals about soccer, on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. This is another great piece by one of the people that we quoted the most during this show. Once again, we are at the end of this journey. Amazing time with you guys, talking to Penguin Radio and having a lot of Penguin aficionados just, you know, getting in touch with me and saying, what a great show. The Champions League, we love it. We have some questions for you. I got fans texting me saying, you know, what they thought about the Champions League and stuff. This article about Jonathan Wilson is called Super Rich versus the Rest. Champions League groups hampered by inequality. It's on TheGuardian.com. Again, one of the very best places where you can find spots to read, great articles to read. And it begins like this. What have we done to deserve this? What a great beginning of an article. An article that describes how the efforts of Dinamo Zagreb, Club Brugge, Slavia Prague and Olympiacos were not enough, because group stages of this year and previous years as well, Champions League, are still too predictable. The last round of the Champions League, Jonathan Wilson writes on TheGuardian.com, group fixtures is on us, and only half the qualifiers are already known. There will actually be something to play for, intrigue on both nights, which is rare enough by this stage. Football is spoiling us. Liverpool, the holders, could conceivably go out. There is a head-to-head showdown between Shakhtar Donetsk and Atalanta. There are complicated permutations to determine which of two, Chelsea, Ajax and Valencia, go through. Will end up Chelsea and Valencia in vice versa order. It has been a better group stages than most, and yet it remains easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for an outsider to reach the last 16 of the Champions League. Most striking, perhaps, have been Salzburg, Erling Braut Haaland, someone we have been discussing a lot here, has understandably drawn most of the attention, but Huang He-chan and Dominik Szabolai also offer evidence of Zalberg's capacity to identify and develop young talent. Jonathan Wilson goes on giving his props to their coach, Ralf Rangnick, and the guy who, the head of the research and development at Red Bull, the one who built the whole Red Bull system. We've been discussing a lot here. We've been discussing a lot of stuff here on the Champions League, guys. Let's do this. Let's go take a sip of water, and after the break, we have the very last segment of the Champions League.
If you're looking for a fun way to get away from the grind of homework and quizzes, then the California Film Institute has you covered. One of the largest nonprofit film organizations in the Bay Area, the CFI proudly owns and operates the Christopher B. Smith Rafael Film Center on 4th Street in downtown San Rafael. The Rafael Theater is open year-round and is home to the prestigious Mill Valley Film Festival and the Docklands Documentary Film Festival. The Rafael's catalog of films include award-winning independent dramas, shocking and revealing documentaries, the best in world cinema, rare retrospectives, along with opera and ballet performances presented live on screen. The Smith Rafael Film Center is located at 1118 4th Street in San Rafael between A and B Streets. The Smith Rafael Film Center is the perfect place to start a romantic evening or to decompress with a group of friends. To keep up with everything happening at the Rafael, please visit our website at rafaelfilm.org. Sign up for our weekly e-newsletter and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome back to the very last segment of the Champions League, the only show that brings you inside German coach Julian Nagelsmann, as its very last segment, as I told you right here on Penguin Radio, radio.edu or 102.3 FM. We had such great, amazing journey through the great world of soccer from all around the world, actually, because we've been dealing with the MLS, we've been talking about the Champions League, how Belarusian and Turkmenistani soccer are still being played even during the pandemic, and it's coming to an end. I'm so sorry for that, but my teacher, my head, my boss, Stuart Hearn, has us doing just 9 shows, so we'll come back next year, hopefully, and by then, stay safe, practice social distancing until authorities at your home say so. But by now, let's go back to talk about some soccer on the independent.co.uk, an amazing British online newspaper. This article by Mr. No, no, by Miss. I'm sorry. Yeah, Melissa Reddy. I had not the face of the author in front of me, so I was like, you know, most of the times it's a man writing about soccer, so I said him, but it's a her. And Melissa Reddy, I don't know her. I don't know this journalist, but his article is pretty good. So I guess she is very, very good. So, this article is called, it's an exclusive interview, actually. It's called Meet Julian Nagelsmann, the manager of your club, the manager your club wants to hire. And it deals with the RB Leipzig boss, who sits down with Melissa to discuss turning down Real Madrid. Can you believe that? He is 31, 32, can't remember, but he's still very young for head coach, and he turned down Real Madrid. And also, he drew some interest from the Premier League, and now he has outwitted none other than Jose Mourinho in the Champions League, knocking his Tottenham side out of the Champions League in the round of 16. In fact, RB Leipzig are going through the quarterfinals. This is a quote, it's a great quote that Melissa got from Nagelsmann. It says, Nagelsmann says on this article on The Independent, "It's normal if Real Madrid calls you, you think about it." Nagelsmann admits, "I was surprised at first. I weighed it up and I didn't feel comfortable with the decision to go there. I want to improve. If you go to Real Madrid, there is no time to improve as a manager. You don't have a chance to be a better manager. You already have to be the best. I am not the best now, but I can admit I want to be one of the best in the future. If you go to Real Madrid, Barcelona, the fans, the media, the decision makers don't give you time to grow into that. They only want to see victories, every game, titles, Champions League trophies. If you don't win, you can't say, but I'm still young, I'm still developing. It's not that easy in football to plan a career because it is so unpredictable, but you have to try." So what Nagelsmann did was turning down Real Madrid. Can you believe that? He had an offer as a Real Madrid head coach and he says, "Nope, I'm too young for it." The main thing, continues Nagelsmann on theindependent.co.uk, the main thing is to make the right steps, not the biggest steps. Real Madrid is probably one of the highest steps you can take. So I thought, you're turning 31. Can you believe that, guys? Just 31 years of age. Go to Real Madrid, and where do you go from there? The other thing is language, which is very important to me, says Nagelsmann. "I like to communicate. I'm very expressive with my players. I can't speak Spanish yet. I can only say, hola, ¿qué tal?" So it was the biggest step, but not the right step. So this very young coach had the audacity and the courage to turn down a very lucrative, I can think of it, offer from Real Madrid. This is the second German head coach we are dealing with today, and the last one is none other than Adi Hütter from Eintracht Frankfurt, one of the mastermind we have in modern day soccer. As I told you, this show was a lot about the Bundesliga, and this guy coaches in the Bundesliga for sure. He is Eintracht Frankfurt team from last year was so good. I remember going to the game in Milan in the San Siro stadium, watching him play. And this article we're going to read an extract for that is on footballchronicle.co. It's posted here by Brett Jones. It's called "How Adi Hütter Grew to Establish Himself as One of the Brightest, Best Tacticians in Europe." So let's see, let's read the end here, because we've been dealing with the beginning of the article for most of this show. Let's go with the end now. "Whenever Hütter is around," says Brad Jones on footballchronicle.co, "you can almost guarantee their success, be in the form of trophies or not. And whether he leaves Frankfurt with a trophy or not, at 49 years old, there isn't a chance that he could happily venture out of Germany without silverware to his name. When he travels to next and when he ends up, provides infinite uncertainty in the form of infinite possibilities. That's how good he is. But one thing will always be certain. Eddie Hutter will exceed expectations. That's 100% sure. One other thing that is 100% sure is how much I loved you doing this, guys. DJ Cruyff is out. I've been a great 9 shows marathon with you guys, talking about soccer from all over the globe. Now, our time, unluckily, is over. So, watch the rest of the Champions League when it will be resumed for me. I mean, I should say with me, because you know, your host, DJ Cruyff, will be live at every game of the Champions League and of the Europa League and at the marquee matchups in European soccer and on MLS soccer and on South American soccer, because that's what we do here. We just watch a lot of soccer.